Hey y'all, this is Josiah Gray and this is Half Street High Heat. Hope you enjoy today's episode.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Half Street High Heat, episode 155. Again, I'm two for two this, well, not this week, because this is the first episode, but I'm two for my last two on getting the episode number right, so that's something. We are, as always, presented by Manscaped and a part of the Fansided Network, so thank you for joining. And I have before I ask you guys how you're doing, I'm joined by Amanda and Ryan. I have a problem that I want to get off my chest because I've had a rough 36 hours, maybe the whole weekend. So it all started Friday around lunchtime. We recorded our last episode and I made a decision. I made a decision to not do a bit that would have been really funny for our draft. And instead, I was like, I think I will take this draft seriously. And in doing so, I doomed my co-host Ryan from winning the Twitter poll because I just split the vote. It's like having two award contenders vying for the same award, like a Max Scherzer and Steven Strasburg in years past vying for the Cy Young or you know, Trey Turner, Juan Soto, what it would have been like this year, whatever. I split the vote. Whereas if I just did my bit, it would have been funny and Ryan would have got the votes he deserved because he is being criminally undervoted in our poll and he's probably going to lose because of it. And I take blame. So in response, the universe and its karmic ways doomed me. I had the coldest day betting yesterday that I don't even want to speak of, but I just want the universe and obviously our listeners to know that I got my just desserts. Is that the phrase? I'm gonna go with it. I got, you know, what was coming to me for dooming Ryan. The Chargers lost. The refs, I don't like blaming the refs, but the refs absolutely ruined that game. So the Chargers lost. I lost a lot of money betting. It was not a good day. Just not a good day. So Ryan, I apologize. Amanda, you lucked into a win.
I love how
it's not going to happen today.
Every time I win a poll, and we haven't even, by the way, nobody even knows whose players are whose because you put them out as player one, two, and three and did not assign our names to them.
You got the Soto boost. Let's be honest here.
You could have taken Soto for contact. You took Trout. I was going to take Trout.
Yeah, because Trout's better.
I understand that. I was going to take Trout. You left me Soto, so that's what I took.
Nah,
I'm just pointing out, every time I win a poll, you guys come up with some reason why it's not legitimate.
It's actually weird. There's a glitch in it. Every time someone hit two or three, it automatically voted for one. So, like, we're going to need to investigate this one.
Someone commented literally the first reply to the tweet,
cause Soto.
Like we literally might have to implement a rule where Juan Soto is not draftable in our drafts because it's such a boost. That's literally all we have now as Nats fans is Juan Soto. So it's literally like an ultimate, you know, trump card or, you know, cheat code. It's just not fair anymore, well, even though we're being legitimate with it.
If Trout were off the table and you had drafted next for contact, would you have taken Soto?
I would have stuck with David Fletcher because that's the best contact hitter in the game.
All right. If you say so.
I don't know. But
I'm just saying, I think if Soto had been available that, you know, anybody would have taken him with Trout off the table. Of course, I was going to take Trout for contact.
Basically
anybody with a brain would take Trout, but
all this it was just my way of saying, like, fade me in betting because I am on an ultimate cold streak. Like, man, it was not a good time for it.
The universe had its way with
you. Yeah, that's for damn sure. But how are you guys doing? How was your weekend?
I had a pretty exciting weekend. My husband bought a new car, which buying new cars is always fun and exciting.
He probably already has like 60,000 miles on it, right?
It actually has 59,000 miles on it.
No, but I'm saying he put 60,000 miles on it while we've been having this conversation.
He puts like 5,000 miles a year on his cars. He barely drives anywhere.
I was going to say, do you drive everywhere? You just like, oh, I'm driving. Okay.
That's the seventh time today. Yeah. I'm always driving. Yeah. And we adopted two guinea pigs. My kids have been dying for a pet. Dogs. I love dogs, but I'm not willing to make the commitment. They're very much work. And cats are, I love cats too, but my my husband and one of my sons is allergic, so we can't have cats in the house. So guinea pigs.
I was going to say, you've heard Ryan's horror stories with Finn committing suicide, jumping off balconies, and that just scared you off cats.
Oh, I've had cats and I like cats. I just like, we've got the allergy issue. Dogs, I love them to pieces. They're fantastic, but I know how much work they are because I've had them and I'm just not willing to take that on with my current insane life. So anyway, my kids have been dying for a pet. So we finally pulled the trigger today and bought two little baby girl guinea pigs who are cute as buttons. And my kids named them Rose and Marigold. So that's what's exciting in my life this weekend.
New additions to the family, very on brand with Amanda. Ryan, what's going on with you?
You know, I'm doing great. Derrick Henry happened. Sorry, Nick.
Dagger, just twisting the knife.
and Nick and I's main fantasy football league, we played each other. I had Derrick
Henry. I was doing well too. It's not even like my team was doing poorly. I was like, all right, everyone's doing well. I'm feeling good. And freaking Derrick Henry.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I don't even want to talk about fantasy football. Ryan's team destroyed mine this weekend.
There seems to be a freaking common theme
here. I am good at fantasy football. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
But
so
the problem is, so am I.
Nine fantasy points this week. He had 40 last week. He got 9 this week. And I need DeAndre Swift to get me a quick 40 tonight so I can beat you. That's all.
I just play. That was also what happened yesterday, that was the universe saying, hey, don't cross Ryan again because we will make it right. And it's just extremely frustrating. I had a weekend all money slipping through my fingers, but geez.
I don't ever actually put any money on anything because I like gambling. I like betting. Actually, I lived in Vegas for a while. Gambling is a lot of fun, but every time I put money on something, I lose. So I'm just staying up. I like to play fantasy football, but I'm not putting any money on it. And I don't gamble.
Well, it's not a gamble when you win, but for me, it quite literally is a gamble. It quite literally is a gamble. But all right, moving on to our quick pitch. If you wanted to gamble, there is an award that is currently up in the air with great odds for three very deserving contenders, and that is the Cy Young, in both leagues, I might add. So technically six deserving contenders, because it is very much a discussion. The NL MVP seems to be a two-horse race between Tatis and Harper. We talked about that. AL MVP seems to be Shohei. But if Vladdy Jr. wins the Triple Crown, then that's very much a conversation. But right now it seems to be Shohei. The Cy Youngs for both leagues are very, very, very much up for debate and discussion, however you want to look at it. There is a legitimate argument for a bunch of different candidates. So we're going to put our name on it now. There's about 2 weeks left in the season. A lot can change. That's even though that's about two starts for these contenders, a lot can change in these two starts. Like Garrett Cole, one of the contenders for the AL, just got blown up in his last start. Does that take him out of the Cy Young? If Max Scherzer has another 7-inning scoreless 10-strikeout game, is he the new favorite for the NL Cy Young despite being traded midseason? We're going to talk about that now. We haven't really opened up the discussion for the NL or for the Cy Young in general yet, but definitely the NL Cy Young, because that's very fascinating. You have three basically unreal seasons from Walker Buehler, Corbin Burns, and Max Scherzer. But Ryan, let's start with you. Who are you feeling is the favorite for the NL and AL Cy Youngs?
The AL Cy Young was very interesting until this weekend. Garrett Cole getting absolutely shelled when his team needed him the most kind of helped solidify his fate coming in second place. If he bounces back, if these last two starts and the Yankees make the playoffs, he will win it. I do not think that happens. Robbie Ray is going to win the AL Cy Young, which is really random, but the season he's having is just absolutely absurd. Only 177 innings, which I think is going to be like his only concern when it comes to the voters, because voters are rather big on innings for some reason. But 233 strikeouts, I mean, his whip is barely one, 2.64 ERA. The guy does it all, and he has a 7 WAR. Again, very random, but Robbie Ray will win the Cy Young. The NL Cy Young is a two-dog race. Max Scherzer is only in it because his name is Max Scherzer. No one has won the Cy Young being traded mid-season. Yes, he went in the same league, but a lot of people see their stats reset once they're traded. And again, I don't think you'll have the innings to get it done. So it's right now between Corbin Burns and
Walker Buehler.
Burns has a very interesting, well, not very interesting case. Burns has been very legit all year long. He has a 2.3 ERA. He leads the league in FIP. He is probably going to win the Triple Crown, which is the true results for a pitcher. Those are results that don't truly reflect defense in the way. That's why they call him that. He's leading all those categories, but he only has 158 innings. I have a hard time seeing the voters giving the award to a guy who only will get at most 170 innings when Walker Buehler has essentially the same ERA, is on the dominant Dodgers, and is going to be well over 200 innings this year. So for that, I'm going to say Walker Buehler wins it. It's going to be close, but I think Walker Buehler gets first and Burns gets second.
Yep. Amanda, what do you think?
With you in the AL, I think it's got to be Robbie Ray. Gerrit Cole, just, I don't know. It just feels like with the Yankees kind of self-destructing as the season has been winding to a close, and just his last outing looking so bad. It shouldn't be like, if you have a bad outing like that in May, it shouldn't be different than if you have a bad outing like that in September, but it is different because it's fresh in the minds of the voters. So I do think, let's see, Ray is leading the AL in ERA, strikeouts, quality starts. I think he's a clear winner. I think it's clearer there than it is in the National League right now. Yeah, I've looked at this National League thing over and over again, and I know Scherzer is kind of a dark horse because of the trade midseason and all of that, but I think is he two starts left?
Who?
Scherzer. Is he going to have two more starts?
About
two or three?
It may be three. I'm trying to think the last time he pitched. I think it was Friday, so it's possible he gets a third in, but definitely at least two.
So I think Buehler makes the most sense for several reasons, the biggest of which you just mentioned, Ryan, which is the innings. I just, you know, even being under 200 innings is tough, but being in the 170 range just feels like maybe a bridge too far for a Cy Young, which, you know, makes Buehler the more obvious pick. But I really believe that if Scherzer goes out and has two or three more starts like he's been having, I just think that's such a sexy pick for people, because I swear to God, the national media act like they just rediscovered Max Scherzer exists now that he plays for the Dodgers again. I mean, he's been, you know, he's obviously having an incredible stretch right now, but he's getting so much more attention than he has gotten for his incredible stretches when he played for the Nats. So I wouldn't be shocked if, and this is a big if, he goes out and has two or three more starts like we've been seeing out of him. I wouldn't be shocked if he comes in, if he wins it, I'd be a little shocked, but if he comes in second ahead of Burns, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. So I put out an article just over a week ago checking on the awards, and Cy Young was by far and away the hardest to predict. And as far, I used Vegas odds via Vegas Insider to kind of highlight what the current standings were at the time. This was back on September 12th. So even in 8 days, a lot has changed. Gerrit Cole was the favorite at minus 120, which is a slight favorite if you're not familiar with betting terms. Walker Buehler was plus 140, which means if you bet on him, you would actually make more money than you bet should he win, which just goes to show how close the NL was. My thing with Scherzer is not only did he get traded, but Walker Buehler's on his team, and I just have a hard time believing voters will vote Scherzer over Buehler, who's on the same team, who's been on the Dodgers all year long and played in important games and been consistent. Similar to what Ryan said, like Walker Buehler's stats are very similar, if not better in some areas than Corbin Burns, but Buehler's been doing it for longer in terms of the amount of innings. So I do think Buehler wins pending a massive blow up in his last two starts. I had Garrett Cole winning in the AL just because Yankees, New York, if the Yankees slide into the playoffs, like there's a lot of reasons to think Garrett Cole would win. This last start by Garrett Cole probably lost him the AL Cy Young if Robbie Ray can just continue what he's doing.
Mm-hmm. One bad start really can do it.
At this point
in the race.
I agree with you. Like it shouldn't completely, sink.
Negate what you did the whole rest of the year.
Yeah. Sink their entire hopes. But that's just the fact of the matter. Like with 2 weeks left in the season, it's going to be recency bias mm-hmm. when it's this close. Like Lance Lynn in the AL, I think he's deserving, but he's not going to have the workload. So it really is between Cole and Ray. And if Ray can just be consistent those last two starts, whereas Cole had this recent blow up, no matter what Cole does in the last two starts, like I think the favorite is Robbie Ray at this point. And again, the Blue Jays find themselves in playoff contention, whereas like a month ago, they were still on the outside looking in. So I think Robbie Ray definitely is in that conversation, which leads to a whole nother crazy, discussion with the, I apologize, Monty, I know you're listening. I believe like 2014 Tigers in that rotation because they had Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer, David Price, Rick Porcello, which Rick Porcello does seem like an outlier, but he did win a Cy Young, people forget. And Robbie Ray.
It's crazy.
If Robbie Ray wins Cy Young, that 2014 Tigers rotation will have 5 Cy Young winners.
What a fun little like piece of weird trivia that will be cool to recall like 20 or 50 years from now.
And just to plug another article to the site, like Monty's starting a series, the 10 best teams from the 2010s not to win the World Series. And number 10 was that 2014 Tiger staff because it was timely with Robbie Ray being in the Cy Young conversation. So wild rabbit hole to dive down it. If you want to go check out, that's Monty's article on the site and do some research.
Yeah. Do you remember who we picked as our, because I can't offhand remember, who did we pick to win the Cy Youngs in our predictions?
Monty has that. He's our historian. Please take it up with him.
Fair enough. I will tweet that at him.
Quite honestly, don't even remember who I picked in the AL. Like I'm sure a lot of us probably picked Glasnow, probably Bieber. Which we haven't heard anything from Bieber this year. Ryan, do we know what's going on with Shane Bieber? Has he been hurt? Has he been bad?
It's the same thing. It's just the Guardians. Like no one cares about them. Jose Ramirez is probably like the third best player in baseball and no one's talking about him. No, he's dealt with a lot of injuries this year.
Okay.
He's been fine, but like he's just been hurt.
Yeah. So the workload definitely isn't going to be there, even if his numbers were typical.
3.28 ERA.
Which we act like is so undeserving, but it's like really, really solid. So,
not too shabby.
The Cy Young race will be amazing to follow. It makes like how we view Max Scherzer starts the must watch. Every start for these Cy Young contenders is a must watch because I'm sure these pitchers are all preferring a World Series title over a Cy Young win, award win, but these performances do dictate whether or not they are going to win a Cy Young, and you can literally see them win or lose the award based on the outing, and it's phenomenal stuff to watch.
But drama.
Speaking of phenomenal stuff to watch, and in this case, listen, Ryan's going to take us through the weekend's happenings with his weekend review. Ryan, take it away.
We have 12 games remaining as we are in the final stretch and things are getting hot. We start off with some history as Salvador Perez sets a MLB record for home runs by catcher in a single season. He hit his 46th home run on Monday. And he has taken the lead in the home run contest between him, Shohei Ohtani, and Vlad Jr. It'll be very fun to watch as those three battle out with 12 games left. The Cardinals made a massive statement this weekend as they swept the Padres, taking the commanding 3-game lead in the wild card spot. Padres manager Jace Tingler may be on the hot seat as the San Diego Union-Tribune calls for changes as his team suffered a devastating collapse as they finally got healthy. The Red Sox have won 5 in a row to take a 1-game lead on top of the Blue Jays in the wild card spot. The Yankees struggles to continue as they are now 1.5 games back of the Blue Jays, and they're only half a game above the A's. MLB experimented with moving mounds back, and so far, there hasn't been that much of a deviation of runs. Everything so far has been just about the same in those minor leagues that saw the mound change. Only 1 game separates the Giants and the Dodgers in the NL West. Giants look to be the first team to win 100 games this season. The Phillies took 2-3, and the Braves lost 2-3, so the Phillies are just 2 games back with 12 to go. This is a massive week to decide the worst division in baseball. Phillies have 7 left with Baltimore and Pittsburgh. Atlanta has 8 left with Arizona and San Diego. After that, the two meet in Atlanta for a 3-game set to decide the division. Let's check in on the rest of the division. In fifth place are the 61-88 Nationals. They play in Miami and have blown 2 separate 3-run leads in the first game of the set. In fourth place are the 63-86 Marlins. They chopped 2-3 against the Pirates, and they have come back from 2 separate 3-run deficits. Props to them. In third place are the 73-77 Mets. After they lost 2-3 to the Phillies, they have to head to Boston, and then they play Milwaukee. That sucks. Another report came out that the Mets are aiming high, including Billy Beane and Theo Epstein, as they look for someone to help Cohen stop tweeting and causing a, quote, ruckus within the front office. In second place are the 76-73 Phillies. After talks of a disappointing season the entire season, they're right in the heart of division race. As I said, they're only 2 games back. They took care of New York. Now they have the Orioles. They're only 8-9 in September, but it's been enough to gain 2 games on the Braves as things get close. And lastly, in first are the 77-70 Braves. Giants took 2-3 from them, which included a Kevin Gausman walk-off home run. They look to right their tough stretch with the Diamondbacks up next. This has been your week in review. Make sure you guys head on over to TeePublic and search Half Street High Heat to keep up with all of our latest swag designs and so much more. This has been your week in review.
So I hadn't heard about the Jace Tingler rumors, I guess. Not that it's all that surprising with the seemingly unrest going on there in San Diego. There is obviously very high expectations coming into the season and even through the first half of the season with where they were in the standings and how they're performing. And obviously Tatis kind of emerging as the face of baseball. But now it very much seems like things are falling apart, not just in the standings and with games, but internally as well from the outside looking in. And obviously that falls on the manager's shoulders to fix. Mm-hmm. We've seen that kind of happen with the Nats. You get the keys to a Corvette with a person that just got their license, and it doesn't always work out the best. You've seen that, you know, plenty in sports, but definitely with the Nats and all the managerial changes we went through over the years. Could we see that with the Padres, Ryan? Do you think the Padres make a change this year? And not that I like his style, but the Padres and White Sox went in 2 very different directions, even though they were 2 similar situations with the young and upcoming teams that needed a few more pieces to be established so that they could become contenders. Padres went with the young guy and Jace Tingler. White Sox went with Tony La Russa, very established and experienced. Do you think the Padres move on and try to get someone more experienced?
So the Padres handed over a very, very analytically driven ship to an analytical manager. I think that was the right move, but I really think he's going to be fired. A lot of people in the baseball world were very surprised when this article came out from the San Diego Union-Tribune that was essentially calling for his job, saying it's time for him to be fired. He is kind of being the fall guy for a lot of the front office's mistakes and trades. They've done a pretty good job free agency, but there's been a lot of guys that they've traded in that basically have combined for less than 6 WAR. And a lot of those guys underperformed. You have an analytically smart front office. They kind of botched that there. But the big issue that the article referred to was he's kind of lost the clubhouse. The article talked about how there's a lot of distrust. There's a lot of frustration in the clubhouse. We saw that when Tatis kind of showed up the umpire when he struck out and Machado had a big brother moment yelling at him in the dugout. Apparently there's a little more than that we've seen. There's a lot of players that are upset in the clubhouse that voice concerned about it. So pretty sure Tingler is going to be on the hot seat come this offseason if they fail to come back.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to, somebody's going to have to take the fall for what's happened with them. They had such high expectations this year and they were looking so good going into the last stretch of the season. And I wouldn't be at all surprised that situation with Machado and Tatis. You know, I don't hate situations like that at all. I think it's good when you see players kind of policing themselves and policing each other, but it does maybe indicate that there's a dearth of leadership going on in the clubhouse that they're having to do that. And it's pressure cooker too. And the expectations were so high, things are slipping away. And I think you're just seeing, I think I tweeted that at you, Ryan, where you tweeted something about it. And I was like, this is whatever the opposite of pressure-free baseball is that we've been talking about is what they're doing in San Diego right now. And I keep thinking how different things might be had they paid whatever price the Nats were asking when they were deep in talks for Max Scherzer right before the Dodgers swooped in and got him.
Yeah, that's something we talked about. So last episode, for those who don't remember, we did it backwards. We recorded our draft first because Amanda had to leave a little bit early. But that's something Ryan and I talked about. Like, the Padres have to be sitting there angry with themselves, not only because they didn't get Max Scherzer and he's performing at godlike levels, but also that he went to the Dodgers and the Dodgers are all of a sudden 20 games better than the Padres were when all season long, at least in the first half, they were neck and neck. So it's like, it's just insult to injury constantly for the Padres. So it does seem like Jace Tingler will be the fall guy. Sad to see. I don't think, from what I heard, I don't think it's necessarily mismanagement, but when you lose the clubhouse, it's pretty tough to get it back. We've seen that. Obviously people will remember Matt Williams and how quickly that went south, manager of the year to being fired the next year. So things do change in baseball. It'll be it will be one of, if not the most desired jobs, if it does indeed become available. I'm sure some of the bottom dweller jobs will become available. I don't know what's going to happen with Cleveland. Maybe Terry Francona steps away because he stepped away due to health, correct? Or Guardians. Right. Guardians. So maybe he doesn't come back. That's a team that's constantly exceeded expectations compared to the talent on their roster. So maybe that job becomes available, but even still, I think the Padres job would be the most attractive opening should it become available. But moving on to our Nats, just like the Nats are singles merchants, like Ryan likes to say, due to them having a high batting average, but not a lot of runs scored, meaning they hit a lot of singles. They are quite literally singles merchants in the fact that they only like to win one game in a series. Once again, our Nationals have won or one of three games, dropping two of three in the series. They dropped the most recent series to the Rockies. It's wash, rinse, repeat. The tank is on. There is no denying it. They were down 0-2 in the series and came back. King Paolo masterclass on Sunday to maintain the 2-of-3 as far as losses. Unreal job by the Nats. What were your guys' takeaways from the series? It's actually getting kind of, I don't know if anyone outside of us is noticing that it's constantly 2-of-3, but I'm trying to bring attention to this because I don't know if it's a concerted always effort,
2-of-3,
but it's so entertaining to watch.
You know how Olivia Rodrigo, the songbird of our generation, posed the question, do you get deja vu?
Yes.
I do get deja vu because all they do is lose 2-of-3. They find a way to win one. It always seems to be the last game of the series. I think they're in top 9 right now. So this is game one of the series. We'll see if they win this one. But yeah, all they do is drop 2-of-3. We talked on Friday's episode how Esmino is perfect for depth. He is consistent. He is what you need. He's this team ace right now. He quite literally might be this team's ace, which is so sad as it is. He's our best pitcher. Another pitcher we talked about a lot, Patrick Corbin, sucks. The Road Rockies are the worst team in baseball. They had like 12 wins coming into September. I think they've actually won like 8 games on the road in September. So maybe, you know, they're getting a little better. Patrick Corbin stinks. I'm tired of talking about him. He went 4 innings and gave up 5 runs against the Rockies, mm-hmm. who aren't good. I mean, yeah. they're better than the Nats, but like that's not very hard to do right now. They're literally 10 games better than the Nats, but like they suck. And he sucked again. I am tired of talking about him. I am shunning Patrick Corbin. That's my takeaway from this series. Patrick Corbin is now being shunned. He does not exist until he's A, either in the bullpen, or B, off this team. I am shunning him. He doesn't exist anymore. All in on Espino.
So I tweeted during that last Corbin start, just without comment, the contract status and how much he's due. And I had someone accuse me of assault in my in the comments underneath.
That's assault, brother.
That's assault, brother. Yeah, it's tough to take. You're right. I don't even want to talk about Patrick Corbin. That is what it is. It's so dreadful. Yeah, and by the way, before we move on and I forget, Monty hooked us up. I tweeted at him and told him we needed our Cy Young predictions from the beginning of the year. Nick, you had... Of course,
he hears it right away.
He does. Johnny on the spot. Monty on the spot. Nick, you had Jacob deGrom and Gerrit Cole.
Shocker.
Good picks. I think deGrom had he been healthy, obviously. I picked deGrom and Tyler Glasnow. And Ryan, you picked deGrom and Giolito.
I haven't heard a lot about Giolito this year. I think because Lance Lynn and Rodon have been so dominant. Like, I'm sure Giolito has been doing fine, but you haven't heard a lot of...
Yeah, no Cy Young buzz, certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so well, the Nats keep losing. It's good. That's, I guess, my whole takeaway on that. 2 out of 3 all the time.
I'm mad at myself for going so chalk. Like, I would have thought I would have at least given one, like, a little bit of a out-of-the-box pick. Like, not that Giolito was out-of-the-box pick, but it's at least it's different from Gerrit Cole. But I think my mindset was I probably went Cole because he hadn't won a Cy Young Award before. So that's that. And DeGrom seemed like such a shoo-in. But
Monty went Walker Buehler and Gerrit Cole. So
look at that.
All right. Look at that. So now I am full on the train for Corbin Burns to win MSI Young because I am not here for the Monty victory lap that he's inevitably going to do should Walker
Buehler. You might have to get there for the Monty victory lap.
Yeah, this is true. All right. But back to the Nats, back to the not so fun stuff, although it is funny, but not so fun. Let's talk about something fun.
We're talking about some fun stuff right here.
Kyber Ruiz is getting hot, and that's obviously good news. You have Josiah Gray, who is the other big piece in that deal, working through some stuff right now. I'm not disheartened by it. He's going through, you know, what every young player goes through. I'm not worried about it. I don't think it affects his long-term future outlook. Just working through some stuff, and he's going to have all offseason to kind of right the ship and get better, as all players do. But Kyber Ruiz is finally starting to put the pieces together. Had a great day today. Today being the first game of the who are we playing today? The Marlins again. First day of the Marlins series. Great day. How are we feeling about Kyber Ruiz? Obviously, I know both of you were still very optimistic on him despite a slow start offensively. How are we feeling? Is the Kyber train in full motion now? Choo-choo. Are we still getting up to maximum
operating? Give me my ticket. I'm so on board.
the thing with young players, especially young prospects, you want to see these flashes. You're not looking for straight consistency. If they can give you consistency, that's very rare. You look for these flashes. Ruiz is giving us this flash right now, and it's very fun to watch. In his last 7 games, he's hitting 360, 407, 440. Ooh-wee. That's an 847 OPS. Average for catchers is barely north of 700, so that's great. He has 1 strikeout in his last 7 games. He does not strike out a lot in the minor leagues. That's very good to see. eight RBIs. That's not actually, sorry, that's up to date. And he's 8 for his last 13 with 4 RBIs. We are seeing that Flaster Ruiz right now. He's getting hits on both sides of the plates. He has a good eye and he's just putting the ball in play a lot, making solid contact. And it's great to see because I do think him reaching his potential is very, very crucial for the Nationals. And we're seeing that flash that he can reach his potential. And I'm so excited for it.
God, it's so good to see. Amanda, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I co-sign that. You can't expect young guys, especially really kind of doing their first work in the major leagues, to just be good. They're not just going to come from AAA and come to the major league level and continue what they were doing at AAA. You just don't see that almost ever. But seeing what they're capable of is really important. And getting to see this, I already feel like there was a whole segment of the Nats fan base that was like writing off Josiah Gray and Gabriel Ruiz. Like, how could we have only gotten these bums for Max? Like, oh yeah. My God, I know, it makes me nuts. But you know, these guys were top rated prospects in a top rated farm system for a reason. And I'm very excited for both of them. We did talk recently about, were we concerned about what we were seeing from Ruiz? And we weren't. And it's fun to see. I'm sure the off season, you know, he'll maybe start slow again next year. A lot of players start slow at the beginning of a season, even, you know, kind of gray bearded veterans, even, you see, talking to you, Ryan Zimmerman, but a lot of people start slow, and seeing him kind of find his groove here in the last couple of weeks of the season is really great. Not only for us to watch, because obviously it's a lot of fun to watch, but it's great for him as far as getting his confidence, feeling like he can compete at this level. And I'm all in. I'm on the Ruiz train.
As you should be, and as everyone should be. I mean, we've been preaching it for the week, so I'm not going to, you know, beat a dead horse, but let these rookies, these young guys, allow them room to grow. Allow them room to work through their issues. That's quite literally what the Nationals as an organization are doing. They're saying, hey, no matter what's going on, you're going to have opportunities to work through your struggles. You are not going to get relegated, demoted, punished, whatever, if you struggle. Victor Robles was kind of a different situation because it had been so prolonged. And with the combination of Lane Thomas doing so well, it was like, well, it doesn't make sense to platoon these guys when Robles clearly needs more at-bats to work through what he's going through, and Thomas needs more at-bats because he deserves it. So it was kind of like what we saw with the catcher's position. They sent down Tres Barrera so he could play every day. They kept prior to that, they kept Kyber Ruiz in AAA, despite the fact that he was major league ready, so that he could play every day. And now Robles is playing every day in AAA, working through his struggles, doing well offensively, which is encouraging. Thomas is playing every day in center field, still killing it for the Nats. Best of both worlds. You know, as fans, we need to allow these players the time to work through these struggles should they arise. It's good to see Kyber hasn't gotten too discouraged by any slumps that he's fallen into, specifically offensively at the big league levels. He's finally turning it around. It's just a small taste of what, you know, fans expect and hope for. So that's good stuff.
Can we talk real quick before you move on about Lee Thomas? Just he hit a bomb straight to like straightaway dead center at Marlins Park tonight.
Who does that?
I don't even know what the, I was like getting ready to put the kids to bed and
wasn't. Did you see his face when he hit the pop up to right field and the guy caught it barehanded?
Yes, that was super funny. And then there was a like weird cut in the video too, where they like switched cameras as it was happening.
I mean, I've grown up, I don't know about you, but I've grown up watching my team play for Masson, so I'm used to weird camera cuts and bad camera angles and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't surprising to me in the least. But moving on to someone who we did allow plenty of time to work through his struggles. We got encouraging results there for a while, but he has cooled off a lot recently, and that's Carter Kieboom.
Yeah.
It's obviously, we wanted the narrative to be, oh, he's completely turned it around, but he's still young. He's going to go through slumps, but this one has been a little bit of an extended slump. Ryan, I know you got the stats. What's he been doing recently?
So his last, all of his splits recently are ugly. His last 7 games, he's batting .083. That's a .241 on base percentage with .083 slugging. He did have two walks today, which was nice. He had some pretty good base running. He went 1-for-12 in the Rockies series, which really brought his numbers down. He's hitting .214, .313 on the, sorry, I don't have a slugging ahead of me. I just have his OPS. He's hitting .214 with a .648 OPS on the season. Carter Kieboom is, it's hot and he's cold. I said on this pod not that long ago, I was excited about him because he was finally showing it. And then he immediately turns around and just goes cold.
He's like, I got Shaq's approval. I'm good.
Like, the man's middle name is All's Wen, the greatest middle name of all time. I still think he's fine. I still think Carter Kieboom is going to work through it. Everyone goes through cold stretches. The unfortunate thing, Carter Kieboom has a lot of them. But yeah, it's just, it's growing pains. And we got to get through these. And just hopefully very, very soon, we stop having these very, very long bouts where he just can't hit anything. And he can become more consistently, because he has shown us a couple flashes this year, which is very, very encouraging. It's just, they're always followed by very, very long cold streaks. And that's what's frustrating.
Yeah, I still think he's going to be okay. I don't have the kind of hopes I had for him ever becoming what we initially thought he was going to become, but I do expect that he'll become a serviceable major leaguer. But as you said, they're not going to get sent down. They're not going to get punished. They're going to be able to, all these young players like Kieboom, to work through whatever they need to work through. And he's got this opportunity with the team in a full-on tank here, to just play and play and play through the struggles. But it's not pretty to watch, especially in a time when the offense has actually been kind of chugging along. I mean, we've seen it. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the difference in the offense since the trade deadline is hysterical to me. Like, the fact that we totally tore the team apart and the offense has been better than it was before we did that. I mean, obviously the pitching is just absolutely putrid. You just can't even, like we said, we're not going to talk about Patrick Corbin. He's been just awful. When Espino's your ace, you know, your pitching staff is not good, and they can be not good and they can work through their struggles too. And I think we're just seeing that with them, and we're going to see that with Kieboom. And hopefully by the end of next season, when we get a much longer look at him and he gets hopefully a full season here at the major league level, in a season where they're not likely to be competing for anything, we'll know a lot more about who this guy really is by this time a year from now.
Yep, absolutely. And we all kind of talked about, we talk outside of this podcast, and, or at least while recording it, and we talk about how, you know, next year is probably going to be an extension of this year, hopefully better than what we've seen in August and September thus far, but definitely going to be an extension of this year. We shouldn't fully expect to be back in 2022. We can take steps to get there, but we will not necessarily be all the way back in 2022. So that allows someone like Kieboom time to work through his stuff. Same thing with Robles, same thing with, you know, any of the young guys, the catchers, Garcia, Lane Thomas, whoever, you know, it allows them time to work through their stuff, and it allows time for the Nats to kind of wait and see before they rush to a decision, maybe like they did with Lucas Giolito, saying he was more of a reclamation project than a proven thing at the time of the trade. Very clearly a proven thing, not a proven thing, but he was going to be a guy. And maybe the Nats, you could argue that the Nats might've given up on him a little too early. They don't want to make the same mistake twice. So 2022 is going to be a time for them to, you know, evaluate guys a little bit better, give them more of an opportunity to prove themselves. But one thing that does not have to prove themselves, or one company, one product, Manscaped. Manscaped does not have to prove themselves. They've been the number one leader in male grooming for some time now. I don't know what year they were created, but they've been the best ever since they became a thing. They are still the best, and timely, because I am terribly a terrible sports gambler. I'm going to do the sports gambling read. Attention gamblers of all shapes and sizes. Our friends at Manscaped have a can't-miss bet for you today. I like the sound of that. The leaders in male grooming just launched their fourth-generation performance package. The betting odds are in your favor when you use the Lawnmower 4.0 on your balls. Across the board, this is the package to get you in the mood for whatever your gambling heart desires. Are you ready to take the leap to male grooming royalty? I sure am. I could use a can't miss bet. 2 million men worldwide already have. You can join the Manscaped movement by going to manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping with our promo code HSHH20. Like I said, this will get you 20% off and free shipping your entire purchase. No exclusions, no limited time only. Well, you should definitely do it right now so you can get a jump start on your male grooming if you haven't already. But 20% off and free shipping your entire order. The performance package, if you are interested, which you definitely should be, Lawnmower 4.0, which is the best grooming tool out there. The Weed Whacker, which is their ear, nose, hair trimmer. Also, best grooming tool out there. They're tied. They're co-best grooming tools. You get the Crop Reviver, the Crop Toner, both exceptional. The Shed Travel Bag, which is just like a nice little travel bag to throw your goodies in. And a pair of boxers, which, comfy boxers. I literally went back and bought more boxers from the site because of how comfy the ones were that I got from the performance package. So you get my seal of approval as well. And that's really all you need. But again, go to manscaped.com. Use our promo code HSHH20 for 20% off and free shipping today. All right. So I'm sure you guys all expected this coming. Our last episode, we did a draft where we created the best five tool player based on traits of players around the league. Those results went on Twitter earlier today. I haven't looked at the poll. Don't care what the poll is. I'm on to this next draft. We are going to do pitchers, specifically pitches in baseball. And I know this has been done elsewhere before. I don't really care because all you should focus on is our draft and what we pick, right? And that's all I'm focused on. I'm not worried about the outside noise. I'm worried about making this draft the best draft yet. Okay, so the way it's going to work, you can pick a pitch in baseball from any pitcher. They have to be active, so you can't take like Mariano Rivera's cutter or anything like that. They have to be active. You have to take a fastball, whether it's a four-seam, a two-seam, a sinker, whatever. You have to take a fastball, and you get four pitches. You can make him whatever you want. So if you want to take four-seam, two-seam sinker, those are three of your pitches. If someone wants to take, same thing as last episode, if someone wants to take, Mariano Rivera, well, you can't take Mariano Rivera. If someone wants to take Max Scherzer's fastball after someone's already taken Max Scherzer's curveball, they are allowed to do so. Just because one pitch has been taken from a pitcher doesn't necessarily mean no one else can go back to the well on that pitcher.
A quick question.
Oh, God.
Does it have to be starters?
No.
Okay.
No, not at all. So we good?
I think so.
All right. Let me go to my random.org. Should have had this already, but here we go. All right. So we got Amanda, Ryan, Nick, and a scintillating content. Randomize. All right. All right. I can work with this. First pick goes to Ryan. Second pick, myself. Third pick, Amanda. Draft as always. This is one I really didn't want third pick because there's one pitch I need to take. But nevertheless, Ryan, you get to start us off. Big pressure. You get the 1-1. What's the best pitch in baseball? What are you taking?
I know what – sorry, let me rephrase that. I know what the best pitch in baseball is. I know I can get it on my way back. I wanted the first three. Sorry, I wanted the third pick, but that's all right. I'm starting off, I'm staying away from the analytics for my first pick, but I'm going with Shohei Ohtani's splitter. It has a batting average of .067. That's the lowest in baseball amongst all pitches. It has a slugging of .084. That is the lowest slugging of all pitches in baseball. It has a 51 whiff percentage, a 58 K percentage. It's absurd. It is the toughest pitch to hit in baseball and has the lowest slash line against. Those numbers are absolutely filthy. Respect Shohei Ohtani's splitter. Again, like I said, I'm sticking to a hat in my mind, so that's why I'm picking him first.
That's fine. man, when you throw, what's his splitter? Like a 91, 92 mile an hour splitter?
It averages 88.5.
Okay, so a little bit slower, but nevertheless,
it's still phenomenal.
Phenomenal. That wasn't intended to take away from Shohei Ohtani. It is one of, if not the best pitch in baseball. All right, my pick. I get the one I wanted, although Shohei Ohtani splitter was on my list, so that is unfortunate. But we ride. We ride. I am going with one of, if not the most aesthetically appealing pitches in baseball. There's a fastball I really want, but I think I can get it on the way back, so I'm not as concerned right now. So I'm going to go with the pitch I wanted, my number one on my big board, and that is Clayton Kershaw's curveball. The most satisfying pitch to watch in baseball. It's just the perfect 12-6. Let me pull up the stat. His lifetime, so the lifetime batting average against his curveball is 134, which is absurd. And he, there was a stretch where he hadn't given up a home run on off his curveball in like years. So I don't really need to do much to sell it. Go watch it if you haven't seen it or don't remember what it looks like. Just so pretty, so aesthetically appealing. Clayton Kershaw's curveball is my first pick.
That is a very good one. Okay, so Ohtani splitter was very much on my list, so I'm sad to see that one off the board. I think I'm going to go with Corbin Burns's cutter that has a run value of negative 23, which is
good.
Just
pick, good pick.
It's just, hey, crazy.
Hey, Amanda, explain what run value is, because I was going to explain it when I picked my next one.
Oh, okay. Well, my understanding is basically how many runs you should expect to be scored against a particular pitch. So zero being the average. If it's a positive number, that is not good. A negative number is good. And the more negative, the better. The next one, by the way, for run value is Emmanuel Clase, which is negative 13. So 10 better, which is just crazy.
Good pick. Good pick.
All right. My next one. Oof. Okay. So I like the cutter. I think I'm going to go with, I do love a curveball. I might take, Craig Kim. No. God, this is a hard one. All right.
Oh, I'm no. Brian Kimbrell's fastball is dumb.
I know. No,
she was
I
saying
know.
Curveball, which his knuckle curve is very good too.
His knuckle curve is very good, but he's I'm just like... I'm so torn right now. I think I'm going to go ahead and go fastball because I don't want to miss out on this one on the way back. This one, I'm actually super torn between a couple of them, but just looking at the stats, I think I'm going to go Josh Hader's four seamer.
I mean, it's not a bad pick.
It's not a bad pick. And I know it's a little bit off the wall because it's not the one you think of, but the batting average against is 106. It's got a whiff rate of 40. It's a phenomenal pitch. It's not the one he gets the most play for, but as I'm sitting here looking up and down the list of who's got the best pitches, there are ones with better run value, but those for me, what I love to see is that low average against. That's what I look for in a great pitch. And that's really the only thing that matters. The rest of it, the whiff rate, all of that, like it doesn't really matter how you get somebody out. What matters is that you get them out. And the batting average against being only 106 was the kicker for me on that one. So there you go. Josh Hader's four seamer.
Good pick. Man. I want to go. There's two pitches I really want, and I'm concerned whichever one I don't take, Ryan will take. And it's really going to bother me. So I'm struggling here between two. I'm going to go change up because I think I'm okay with my backup fastball options, whereas my backup changeup options, I'm not as confident in, even though there are some good changeups out there. I'm going to go Devin Williams changeup. I mean, the pitch literally... I mean, it's Pitching Ninja who called it that, but it literally has a nickname. It's an airbender. It's absurd. The thing just falls off the table. It is absurd. Absolutely love it. I mean, I think I might just go you know, a lineup of aesthetically pleasing pitches because it's just fun. And so far I have that, but he throws his changeup 64% of the time, which goes to show you how dominant it is, that the fact that he has a 2.5 ERA and he throws his changeup that much more so than his fastball. He throws his changeup more than half the time.
It's crazy. That's an unusual situation.
His batting average against it is 162. Like his average exit velocity is 83.4, which isn't hard at all, especially, you know, in today's major league. Whiff percentage is a 47.6. So just under half the time people swing at it, they don't hit it. Like it's absurd. One of the best pitches in baseball, but also one of the best pitches to look at in baseball as well. So that's my second pick.
I like it.
So I'm between two pitches for this one. I was kind of hoping I was gonna get the third pick for this, but that's okay. I'm gonna go with what I originally had, and I was gonna rant about what run value was, but Amanda decided to bring that one up. So I'm gonna cut out my run value here. And I'm going fastball, and I'm going Carlos Rodon's fastball. He has a run value of -25. That is the best run value of all pitches in baseball this year. As Amanda said, MLB average is zero. His is -25. Guys are hitting just 0.204 with, it's rather good. a 0.348, a 0.348 slugging against a fastball is absurd. And he has a 30% strikeout rate. His fastball is rather good. So I have my fastball and I have my splitter. My next pitch, and it's a shame he got hurt, but probably the reason why he got hurt is because he's throwing a 95 mile per hour slider, and I'm going Jacob DeGrom slider. Guys this year hit 0.096 with a 0.175 slugging against it. He has a 60% K percentage with his slider. We saw it this year early when he won a complete game shutout against Nats. That slider is absolutely absurd. The fact that he's touching 94, 95 with a slider is absolutely cheating. It's not normal. Like, a human being should not be able to do that. And so with my third pick, I am going Jacob DeGrom's slider.
That's good, a pick. Great one.
I was wondering when the sliders would go off the board. There's a lot of good ones throughout baseball. It seems to be the go-to pitch as far as a put-away pitch. People think it's the curveball, but really it's the slider. Jacob DeGrom has one of the best, if not the best. I'm going with a different slider. Maybe I should go fastball. No, Amanda went fastball. I can wait on my fastball. I'm going to go with the slider here because Amanda has not. And it's – so he's back to pitching this year. He was hurt for a while, but his pitch, his slider has always been one of the best. It's insane how much horizontal movement it gets. It's a complete wipeout slider. Doesn't matter if it's to lefties, doesn't matter if it's to righties. It's one of the best pitches in baseball. And I'm sticking with my theme of one of the most aesthetically pleasing pitchers out there possible. I'm going Chris Sale's slider because that thing is a wipeout pitch. I mean, not that Chris Sale is a schlub, but his slider has always,
it is always a pretty pitch. I've seen that one on Pitching Ninja, and it's just mesmerizing.
Limited sample size this year because, again, he just got back from, I believe it's Tommy John, but 158 batting average against. His spin rate is 2200, which is very good. I mean, like I said, to get that much horizontal movement on it, you're going to need some spin rate on it. The spin is literally what determines how much a ball breaks or if it doesn't break at all. So that's very good. Chris Sale slider. I'm pretty confident in my first three.
Yeah. You can't hate that. Okay. So I want a slider and I want a curveball. So let me go Blake Treinen's slider.
Okay.
Which is he's got some pretty wicked looking pitches. That one, the batting average against is 0.08, and which is also the slugging percentage against, which is interesting. It also has a 46.1 whiff percentage and a 26.5 put away pretty percentage. So it's a pretty good pitch. I've really struggled with curveballs. Curveballs are my favorite a pitch in the world. I love them. They're so satisfying somehow. I'm going to go, although he got hurt this year, which was super unfortunate, with Dustin May's curveball.
That's a good one too. He's on my list, or was on my list for certain pitches. So
yeah, that's just a really pretty curveball. He was looking unbelievable early in the season. It was so unfortunate to see that he got hurt. I mean, yeah. I can't even imagine the Dodgers are so frickin' stacked anyway, what they would have been like with May. But yeah, that's my pick for the curve. So I think I'm done, right? Got my four.
Yep, you are done. So I'll recap all of them at the end. I need a fastball. I've gone everything but. There's plenty of great fastballs out there. I don't know what you're necessarily going to end with, but there's plenty. Like even he just got shelled, but Garrett Cole's fastball is always going to be one of the best or one of my favorites. You need to be able to dot him up whenever you need to. And a good old 99 to 100 mile an hour fastball does just that. But I'm going for the pure blow away power of a fastball, the unhittable, doesn't need moving because it's coming at you at 105 miles an hour. I'm going to roll this Chapman's fastball.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, he tends to get shelled from time to time, but
it's hard to argue with 105 miles.
If I have a pitcher throwing 105, I'm feeling pretty good about his fastball. So that's my mindset behind it. So I'm running out my draft with the roll to Chapman's fastball. Ryan, why don't you close us out? What are you ending your pitcher with?
Chapman's fastball, that's a good pick. I really forgot he existed.
But... So did I, until I was like, oh, wait, he probably the hardest throwing pitcher alive. So
I am going curveball. I have my fastball splitter slider. I thought about going changeup, but I'm on the curve and I'm between three dudes here. I kind of don't want to like acknowledge the fact that Adam Wainwright of all pitchers is having a very good season. So I don't want to pick him. He's such a good curveball. I can't go Charlie Morton, even though as good as it is, he plays for the Braves. The Braves aren't real. So I'm going to go Craig Kimbrell's curveball. Amanda mentioned
earlier. Knuckle curve, I almost to be went specific. That one. I know.
Knuckle it's curve. A good one. Yes, and it is filthy. We saw it a lot when he was on the Braves. He's on the White Sox, and he's still terrorizing hitters with it. 108 batting average against it, 108 slugging, 53.2% curveball. Strikeout rate and a 60% whiff rate. Enough said.
Yeah.
I'm going Craig Kimbrell, curveball, knuckle curve to finish it out.
Yeah, that one is, I was very torn on that one. That was definitely on my list, but that's a great, great pitch.
I am shocked and slightly angry that you guys did not pick changeups. Changeups are so important to a pitcher's arsenal, just the delta in speed. Plus, if you have movement to it, which obviously a lot of the great changeups do, it's the perfect complement. I mean,
pick a fifth pitch. We'll take some changeups.
No, the rule is four. You guys lost your chance. But some of the other change, I mean, Steven Strasburg, just right here at home, like has a phenomenal, one of the best changeups in the league. Luis Castillo, another great one. I just went with Devin Williams because it's absurd, but I easily could have gone with Strasburg or Castillo. I wanted to pick Blake Treinen's sinker because, you know, a 98 to 100 mile an hour sinker.
Yeah.
Downward movement. It ain't too shabby, but just the nature of the way the draft unfolded. A lot of good sliders still on the board. Walker Buehler's slider, Max Scherzer's slider, Justin Verlander's slider.
I almost took Max's, but I figured after I just got accused of only winning a poll because I took Soto, I wasn't going to take anything from Max.
I'll have to do the blind votes.
I wanted to give Max's fastball. That's the only reason why I couldn't after giving Amanda so much crap.
I was thinking the same thing. I had Max for the fastball and the slider, and I was like, no, I'm not taking anything from Max.
If you doubled down on two of his pitches, I would have respected the hell out of it.
I would have won the poll for sure.
I would have loved it.
Max fans around here.
So my thought process coming into this is like, I either take it seriously with highlighting pitches that I absolutely love, being a pitcher myself, or I go full tilt and do the bit I was going to do last draft, but instead I do Max Scherzer's all four pitches for him. Well, I think he throws five, but I was
going to pick a good match
Max Scherzer's, but
we have to be leading the league in funny bits we don't do. That has to be
Oh yeah, I'm definitely number one right now. Because last draft, I was gonna do, because we were doing a five tool player, I was literally gonna pick all of five tools for Victor Robles, because as we know, he is the best untouchable five tool player out there. So
yeah.
I figured I couldn't go wrong, but I couldn't bring myself to do that. So
Max Fried, by the way, was on my curveball list too.
He's a good one.
Curveball.
Charlie Morton, I'm glad you brought him up, Ryan, because like he's a spin rate merchant. Like he's extended his career by embracing spin rate. And you can always argue about what did Houston do to magically, you know, improve spin rate, whether it was sticky stuff, whatever, but you can't deny the results. And Charlie Morton has, you know, definitely extended his career. I mean, dude just signed a $20 million extension for next year at age like 40 or whatever, because of his effectiveness and his spin rate. So that's one that was on there. I love a good two seam. Dustin Mays was on there for me. Yu Darvish, even Kyle Hendricks, which Kyle Hendricks throws like an 85 mile an hour two seam, but has so much lateral movement that it's just disgusting. Like it's just, I could talk about pitches all day if you couldn't tell. So
we can't tell. And could I, one thing I noticed when I was looking at stats to prepare for this draft was Ohtani's splitter is only second for run value, which it was interesting to me. Kevin Gausman's splitter has a minus 21 and Ohtani's has a minus 14. Does that seem insane to anybody besides me?
No,
I'm not sure how they calculate run value exactly, but I'll have to look that up.
Dropped my mic. Gausman's just having such an unreal season that that's not necessarily surprising to me. And I remember them saying that the last time the Nats played out in San Francisco, like I was watching and they were talking about how Gausman has relied on his splitter and how basically it's one of the most unhittable pitches in baseball this season. So it's not entirely surprising, but I do think if there was a quote unquote right selection, I think Ryan made the right selection.
Yes, going absolutely.
Splitter one.
Going with Gausman's splitter wouldn't have been a bad choice, but
It also didn't get picked. So
right, exactly. Although, like I said, I'm looking at
I'm just saying
Ohtani's is better in every category. I need to look up how they calculate run value because that doesn't make sense to me.
I thought you were a run value expert. You definitely
know how they calculate it. I'm gonna have to go look.
You should have let Ryan go on his rant.
Ryan, how do they calculate run value?
Wow, what a good question. So run value takes the impact of every single event. And that means every single pitch that is thrown, right? It takes in the runners on base, the outs, the ball, the strike count, everything. Also takes in the location, and it takes in your whiff percentage. All that goes together, and then they compare it to similar pitches in these same locations and compare how the runs differ and how much the runs will basically variant based on that pitches. That kind of sums it up. It's a kind of complicated stat.
Mm-hmm.
Most deep dive analysis stats in baseball. Yeah.
If you don't like stats, you're not gonna like baseball.
Basically, it just considers every single thing that goes into a pitch.
It's very interesting.
Speaking of what goes into a pitch, I guess we should probably mention that Sam Clay walk-off wild pitch. They're given up by old Sam Clay, and the Nats lose 8-7 to the Marlins. So
commitment to the tank.
Ryan, I assume it's you. Yeah, a walk-off wild pitch is really embracing what the Nats 2021 season is all about. Yeah. So
it's hard to get worked up about it anymore, but damn.
It's funny. It's funny. not in like a we're making fun of them way, but just like, you have to accept the season for what it is. We talked about it in the last episode, but you have to accept the season for what it is. It's just crazy that we're here, and I don't know, not going to be overly invested in every game anymore. Like I'm still invested, but you know, it's part of just letting the players play and the young guys grow. I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
But
yes. So what's left? Just our one big thing tonight?
Well, just to recap the draft really quick.
Oh, okay.
Ryan, Shohei Ohtani's splitter, Carlos Rodon's fastball, Jacob Grom's slider, Craig Kimbrell's knuckle curve.
Oof.
I have Clayton Kershaw's curveball, Devin Williams' changeup, Chris Sale's slider, and Aroldis Chapman's fastball. And what is the most aesthetically pleasing pitcher ever? And Amanda has Corbin Burns cutter, Josh Hader's four seam, Blake Treinen's slider, and Dustin May's curveball. So those will be posted. I'll try to get them up tomorrow. I want to know right away. I'm moving on from last draft. I'm on to this draft. We're on to Cincinnati. But those results will be posted on Twitter, so be sure to go vote. Now we are moving on to our one big thing, as we do to end every episode. Amanda, since you were so eager, what do you got to wrap up the show?
So Josh Bell is what I want to talk about.
Robbing a home run today.
Robbing a home run, which is not the thing you expect to hear when you talk about Josh Bell. But they need to extend Josh Bell. He had a very rough start with the Nats in, you know, at the beginning of a season, which it's hard to remember. We had, you know, put a championship team on the field aspirations. So it was really tough to watch at the beginning and kind of ask yourself, wow, was this, yeah, they didn't pay much for him. So it wasn't like it was a bad trade either way, really, but it was hard to be confident that that was something that was really going to work out. And he's really had a great last half of the season. He's really rounded into form. He's found his power. He's somebody that I really want to see them get locked up a little bit longer term so that we can get through what's unlikely to be competitive next year, as we've talked about a lot, and into the following years with Josh Bell as a part of this club. So he is watching him. If you haven't seen it, the App Street High Heat account did tweet out the video of him robbing a home run in the outfield. It was awesome. So make sure you check that out if you haven't already.
Absolutely. I mean, we talked about this offseason needs to be an offseason to add at least one building block, if not multiple building blocks, but I would definitely consider Josh Bell a building block. He needs to be here longer than just for 2022. I think he's earned it, and he's proven that he's maybe not like a top tier first baseman, but definitely a solid first baseman that won't be a liability. So I'm all for it. I've always been on the Josh Bell train. But Ryan, what do you got?
I don't have anything really. I'm just enjoying the collapse of the Braves, because I think we're, 10 years at the anniversary of the Braves' last extreme September collapse. So if the Braves could do it again, that'd be rather fun for me, because I am going to have a very fun time trolling the Braves, which, like, I've never done before in my life. I've never trolled Braves fans before. So this will be really fun for me to do for the first time.
Which... Let us all remember Toxic Shaq.
Or like last week.
R.I.P.
like
to our fallen comrade. I will say the potential Atlanta Braves tank has large implications for multiple reasons. Obviously, the anniversary, like Ryan pointed out, and the fact that the Braves, who Braves fans love to assume they're just the best, them tanking. But also on the flip side, Ryan outlined this last episode, the Phillies make the playoffs. Right, they would be the choice to win, or the option to win the NL East should the Braves collapse. The Phillies make the playoffs. Bryce Harper wins MVP. You know, Toxic Shaq is coming back for that as well. So we're talking a complete field day if the Braves pull off an epic collapse. So I am actively rooting for it. Not that I wasn't to begin with, but I am definitely rooting for it now. So my last thing is sort of a programming note, so to speak. So the season's winding down, obviously not necessarily the season we had hoped for or wished for or anything like that. Our season definitely will not extend into much into October, but we want to do something fun from Half Street High Heat, and Ryan and I were talking about it. So Amanda, you're actually just finding out about this, so I apologize, but we're gonna do a week-long giveaway. And so the last 7 days of the season, we will do a different giveaway each day to kind of just wrap the season, say thank you to our heaters for, you know, all your support throughout the ups and the downs that came with the 2021 season. We want to end the regular season strong. Obviously, we will still be recording and giving our thoughts and opinions and news and whatever throughout the playoffs and offseason. We're not going anywhere, but just as a thank you, we're going to do 7 days of giveaway to end the Nat season. So whatever the last day of the season is, go back 7 days and that's when we'll start. I don't have that off the top of my head, but that should start sometime next week. So I just wanted to give you guys a heads up, so that way you know what to be on the lookout for. We have some bobbleheads. We have some merch from our store. We have some Nats merch. It's going to be 7 days to win something. So if you never won something in your life, like me never winning a bet in my life, apparently you have the chance to win something. So I just wanted to give you guys a heads up to be on the lookout for that, because that'll be exciting. And hopefully you guys will enjoy that as well. But that's all I got. You guys have anything else before we go?
I do not.
Ryan, anything? You good?
We ride.
We ride. All right, guys, be sure to check out the website. Like I said, Monty's been, you would think we have Monty locked in a closet somewhere saying write X amount of articles every day. Otherwise, you don't get to see
He's
sunlight.
He's been trolling me on Twitter while we've been recording. You guys probably haven't noticed yet, but I asked him for
That's part of his job description. Yeah. That's part of him being locked
He's been
in the closet.
Posting
you have to
write
X amount of
stuff
articles,
I
but
said.
Also have to troll Amanda a certain amount of times a day in order to see sunlight.
I had forgotten that I said that that we'd get a no-hitter out of Patrick Corbin this year, so he was nice enough to post that.
I mean, while we're down that road, CK had Patrick Corbin as a dark horse candidate for NL Cy Young. So don't go down alone. Bring CK down with you.
You know, that's an excellent point. I'll bring everyone down with me. I gotta go back and find everybody's bad predictions. I'm gonna tell Monty, that's fine. You do that to me, but you better put everybody else's bad ones up there too.
Yeah, we're an equal opportunity employer. Like everyone, if one person goes down, everyone goes down. I'm pretty sure that's how it works. But yeah, Monty's been posting a ton of articles. We've given him, Monty's gone off the rails. We've given him too much control. He's just writing about whatever he wants, but nevertheless, it's all good stuff.
Awesome content on the
website. Great content. So go check that out. Matt and CK still writing for the site too. Obviously, it's just overshadowed by Monty's flooding to the website right now, but good for you guys, because you get multiple articles a day on top of the episode, on top of the tweets, highlight all that good stuff. So go check out the website, halfstreethighheat.com. Follow the show at Half Street High Heat. Ryan at We Are All Shaq. Amanda at AWhite7877. And myself at Nationals Ace. We thank you for listening. Until next time, let's go Nats. I assume we're going to be talking about how the Nats won one and lost one of these next two, because they will inevitably drop 2 of 3. So let's go Nats. Let's drop 2 of 3.
Go Nats.
There's a new breeze blowing off the banks of the Potomac. A new team's mowing down the ranks of their opponents. The Nationals are smashing balls, so that the commentator who has the calls has passed the wall to see you later. Let's go Nats. We've got a game to play. We're gonna win today. Let's go. By the early light of dawn, well, you can see they're running scared, cause the kinds of bombs we're launching are bursting in the air. Tell the Library of Congress that they might not want to look, cause we're putting curly W's in every book. Let's go Nats. We've got a game to play. We're